Blog Talk Radio.
Plumber in Tent City, Mr. President, if I could ask you one simple question, is how could you make Timothy Guyton the head of the Treasury?
You know what, never mind, I get it. You don't even have to say, you're just a spokesman, right? Same snake, new face,
and the Hope for Change campaign. Seriously, that was clever, cause hope is just a word, and you're the best lie ever. That's 16 months and start bringing him back, but you haven't, you've expanded, now you're trying to pass a draft. You said you cared about our families, but now it's clear to see that you don't give a fuck about us. All you care about is wealth, not peace, not dreams, certainly not me, but I don't see you as my chief. You're just a white collar thief, another Tavistock production, trilateral connection, a Bilderberg commercial, and kissing just little messenger.
I heard you with Kennedy, yes, I'm thinking more like Mussolini with the youth brigades and stars. Yeah, just call him out, see him, say yes we can, yes we can, yes we can. What?
I just got one more question here, Obama, where you taking?
He was a righteous man, the sort of people invite this man to make newer policies, the same laws they never will see. Step to support righteous men. Why did the people invite this man to make newer policies? Somebody help me please understand.
Yeah, a black man in a white place, yo. The Uncle Tom of my space, yeah. Yo, I'm glad I went and said it. I'll say it and I'll say it loud, yo. Fuck the president. No sucker boo, this silly cat's trying to rob you.
Yo, say what? Yo, what you mean he trying to get us? An intelligent black man, I think you're jealous.
Yo, sucker, please go do your research. The big new and Kissinger were his teachers.
Yo, why you gotta go and hate on a brother? You know that's what they want us to do to each other.
Yo, true that, but the truth takes precedence. All anyone can really do is weigh the evidence.
And if you can't see the Wall Street cronies claiming all the turf for themselves and they homies, then you about to get jacked for your home. When you out on the street and you can't get alone, and catch you thinking, would you do it again? Give your vote to a black man just because he said he was a righteous man.
The sort of people invite this man to make newer policies, the same laws they never will see. Step to support righteous man. Why did the people invite this man to make newer policies? Somebody help me please understand.
Oh, no, you're not the righteous man, no, no. Oh, no, you're not the righteous man, no.
Okay. The president gave his address, and now... your humble host, Dr. C. Robert Jones of the C. Robert Jones Situation Report, will tell you all about it. Today's date, September 8th, 2011 AD. We're here in beautiful Old Town Alexandria, Virginia, United States of America, Washington, D.C., that too, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. Obama gave his speech, and even though he read from the teleprompter, head going this way and that, never being able to focus on his audience, Congress, because he's too busy looking to the left, and then to the right to read his speech. Where do we begin? Let me just say this. If your best man at your wedding or your maid of honor is going to give you a toast and a speech at the rehearsal dinner, whatever it is, and they bring out a slip of paper and they start reading from the paper versus just standing up and speaking from the heart, which do you think would be more genuine? If we are in such tough times, if we're in such dire straits with regard to our financial situation and unemployment and all of that, why couldn't the president just stand up and talk about it from the heart with few prepared text, if any? Why read from a teleprompter? Why not just stand up in front of the American people and talk about it? And in addition to that, all we really heard was the same thing that he said over and over and over again. And that's what the pundits said would happen. More spending. More and more spending. Well, it's true. We have some serious issues with our school system, public school system, in terms of how their maintenance is and how buildings are falling down and falling apart. We have infrastructure issues. Roads need to be built. Bridges need to be repaired. I agree with all that. But haven't we heard this before? We heard this when President Obama said that we needed to spend nearly $1 trillion in order to keep unemployment down to 8%. And he guaranteed it. So now the president wants to enact a second stimulus by spending more money for shovel-ready projects that he already admitted weren't shovel-ready. So, where are we here? When Obama was elected president, he announced that his stimulus package would create 2.5 million jobs by 2011. That didn't happen. Few details, as is with this speech. Including how much new government spending he'll propose and how he's measuring job creation. Press reports suggest Obama wants to spend between $400 and $500 billion over the next year, not 2 years. $400 to $500 billion more dollars that we don't have in order for the president to save his job. Because that's all that speech really amounted to, was the president attempting to save his own ass. When you're trying to save your job, you'll do anything. Well, almost anything. This is Keynesian economics, which is the theory that the economy can be boosted if the government borrows money and then gives it to people so they'll spend it. This supposedly primes the pump. As the money circulates through the economy, Keynesian theory sounds good, doesn't it? And it would be nice if it made sense. But it has a glaring logical fallacy. It overlooks the fact that in the real world, government can inject money into the economy without first taking money out of the economy. More specifically, the theory only looks at one half of the equation, the part where government puts money in the economy's right pocket. But where does the government get that money? It borrows it, which means it comes out of the economy's left pocket. There is no increase in what Keynesians refer to as aggregated demand. Keynesianism doesn't boost national income. It merely redistributes it. The pie is sliced differently, but it's not any bigger. The real-world evidence also shows that Keynesianism does not work. Both Hoover and Roosevelt dramatically increased spending. Neither showed any aversion to running up big deficits. Yet the economy was terrible all throughout the 30s. Keynesian stimulus schemes also were tried by Gerald Ford and George W. Bush and had no impact on the economy. Keynesianism has also failed in Japan during the 1990s. Now, to be fair, the inability of Keynesianism to boost growth may not necessarily mean that government spending does not create jobs. Moreover, the argument that government can create jobs is not dependent upon Keynesian economics. Politicians from both parties, for instance, argue in favor of pork field transportation bills. When the economy was enjoying strong growth, they favored these pork-filled transportation bills. Unfortunately, no matter how this issue is analyzed, there's virtually no support for the notion that government spending creates jobs. Indeed, the more relevant consideration is the degree to which bigger government destroys jobs. Both the theoretical and empirical evidence argues against the notion that big government boosts job creation. And this is what Obama is attempting to fool us with. Creating jobs out of thin air. He would have us believe that we can create jobs by spending $3 to $5 trillion. It's pure Keynesian economics, and it doesn't work. It simply does not work. The insidious notion persists that government job creation actually generates an increase in employment. According to this view, this tainted view, if construction companies increase employment by 100,000 jobs due to a $3 billion government spending program to finance highway construction, then employment is 100,000 jobs ahead of what it might be in the absence of the program. But rarely does the government debate focus on how employment in other sectors is affected when the government seeks the $3 billion necessary to finance its programs. These effects are important, but unfortunately less visible because they're spread among hundreds, if not thousands, of employers. It simply doesn't work. It's all a big Ponzi scheme designed to get us to feel good about something that isn't real. Government spending, including spending designed to stimulate unemployment, may be derived from three sources. Just three. The first is taxes. If individual income tax are raised by $3 billion to fund our highway project, disposable income is reduced by $3 billion. Consequently, individuals will demand less clothing, fewer appliances, and so on. Private sector employers will notice and respond by laying off workers. Since most of us will argue that we can spend our income more effectively than can the government, if only for the fact that we do not have to pay a bureaucratic overhead charge, layoffs in the affected companies will exceed the employment added by the companies. It's just basic economics. So the president wants to have you believe that somehow we have $3 to $5 trillion to spend in order to improve schools and roads and put people back to work. Did he mention how he plans to pay for it? Where is that money coming from? In his speech, he suggested that we should tax the wealthy, tax the rich, that they should pay their fair share. Are there enough billionaires and millionaires to pay for this plan that Obama laid out just a half hour ago? Do we have enough billionaires and millionaires and corporate jet owners that can throw in the kitty $3 to $5 trillion? How much is the richest man in America worth? How much does he have in cash to give to the government? Are there enough rich people on the planet that Obama can tax in order to pay for this $3 to $5 trillion jobs bill? I don't think so. So, once again, the president's speech was just that. It was as empty as the suit he is wearing. This jobs bill is just another way for Obama to show us how much he cares, how much he truly cares about those of us who are out of work. And in fact, Obama offered that we should increase unemployment payments for a full year. 99 weeks, 60 weeks, 80 weeks. More unemployment compensation so that those people can take that meager $300 to $600 a week and spend it, priming the pump, as Keynesians would suggest, so that they won't be out on the street, I suppose. Where does that money come from? So the government would have you believe, and Barack Obama would have us all believe, that by taking from the rich, we can give to the poor. Or by taking from the rich, we give to the government, and the government gives to the poor. I have an idea, Mr. President. Why not just shut up? Shut the hell up. Call off your dogs with all these asinine regulations. Stop bad-mouthing rich people. And let the economy fix itself. Stop trying to play God with this nation. You're just a president, and you're not even a very smart guy. I know a lot of people a whole lot smarter than this guy, the president of the United States, but yet he's touted as being this genius. And all this great genius has done is screw up this nation's economy and the nation, period. He can no longer blame these disastrous policies and unemployment numbers on George W. Bush. He can't do it. But yet he'll try. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Situation Report and all that.
Why is Ayn Rand's great novel Atlas Shrugged a bestseller today, more than half a century after it was written? It's because our real world today is just like the fictional future that Rand foresaw in Atlas Shrugged. It's a time of crisis and decay, but it's also a world of innovation and achievement. It's a world of heroes and villains, driven by very different philosophies. We wrote I Am John Galt to tell their stories. We look at the heroic innovators who are building our world and show that they're doing it just like the heroes of Ayn Rand's novels. They're using her philosophy of capitalism, reason, objective reality, and self-interest. Who is John Galt? Meet John Allison, the mild-mannered Southerner who created one of America's greatest banking empires. He did it with Ayn Rand's philosophy by getting every one of his tens of thousands of employees to read Atlas Shrugged and live by its code. In the great financial crisis of 2008, his bank was about the only one that didn't need a government bailout. But the government forced Allison to take TARP money anyway. After that, Allison walked away, just like John Galt did. There's so many other Rand heroes in our midst. There's Bill Gates, the genius who built the world's greatest company and the world's greatest personal fortune, only to have his own government call him a criminal for succeeding too much. Isn't he just like Hank Reardon from Atlas Shrugged? And how about Steve Jobs, the brilliant entrepreneur who reinvented computers, movies, music, telephones, just because he thought it was so cool? He's got the same attitude toward life as Howard Roark from Rand's other great novel, The Fountainhead. Build it, and I don't care if they come. You'll meet some real-life Rand villains in our book, too, the parasites who are trying to destroy the world. Remember Wesley Mooch from Atlas Shrugged, the corrupt bureaucrat who destroyed the economy? That's Congressman Barney Frank, who spent years subsidizing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in the name of altruism. When Fannie and Freddie nearly wrecked the U.S. housing market, what did Frank do? Just like Mooch, he demanded wider powers. And you'll meet Paul Krugman, the rabid partisan pundit who spread socialism from the pages of the New York Times and thinks nothing of using the power of the press to destroy his political enemies. He's Ellsworth Toohey, the scheming, dwarfish newspaper columnist straight from the pages of The Fountainhead. These are some of the heroes and villains who move our world. So who is John Galt? I am. You can be too. Read our book and find out how.
I remember America. Sure, you can still find it on a map. But nobody older than 20 thinks this is America. Even if coordinates are the same, we've lost our compass. You don't have a direction without reference, a true north. For America, it was liberty. When we lost the love of liberty, our understanding of liberty, it was just a matter of time before the rest of it was lost. Some think it started when the auto companies were nationalized, or the police state to control the internet, or when certain companies couldn't fail because they their relationship with politicians made them too big to fail, and the rest of us, without political influence, were too small to succeed. Sure, that all happened pretty quickly, over just a couple of years, but liberty had been gradually devolving for decades. Some of the more astute, like Ayn Rand, saw it about 50 years before others. She warned us, but people didn't believe it could happen here until it did. Laws had been used to loot productive individuals and businesses, but in the new millennium, under Bush and Obama, graft, corruption, and crony capitalism were no longer hidden behind closed doors. The looters and their laws came out of hiding like rabid animals that were no longer afraid of humans. It was brought into the spotlight, and it was celebrated as enlightened economic policy. Ayn Rand asked the question and Atlas shrugged that the rest of us were asking 60 years later. Which failing financial institution will the administration pluck from the flames of crisis? And which will it let roast? Which market or investment technique will regulate what? What increases change of rules?
And you say you're on a political party
plantation.
Point out to me a place.
You had a right to your wages, but we had no right to our profits. You called it selfish and cruel that men should trade value for value. But you've now established an unselfish society where they trade extortion for extortion.
People who had never produced or managed anything tried to manage every aspect of our lives, and they brought production to a standstill. And eventually, they decided to micromanage the food supply in the name of fairness and safety. And we all know what happened then. Fiction can be a powerful influence, for good or bad. It's too bad more people didn't read Atlas Shrugged. They might have realized where this was heading.
Oh, we're back with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Dr. C. Robert Jones, Doctor of Philosophy, History, College of William and Mary. I bring that up because I'm not an economist. I don't have a degree in economics. But what I do have is just good old-fashioned common sense. And that good old-fashioned God-given common sense suggests that, no, clearly states that we don't have $3 to $5 trillion just kind of laying around in the basement of the White House. So because I know that for a fact, or maybe I don't, maybe Barack Obama has $3 to $5 trillion in a big sack in the White House Situation Room underneath the conference table to spend on all these really fine and noble endeavors, repairing America's roads and bridges. I can dig that. Repairing our school buildings where our children go to be educated. I can dig it. I have a heart, as I know that you do too. But where is all that jack coming from? As I indicated earlier, Keynesian economics means that in order to pay for our roads and bridges to be repaired, Obama has to borrow the money to do that, either from China, which he said in his speech, China is building better bridges and roads than the United States, and he doesn't want China to outpace the United States in building bridges and roads. So I guess we're going to borrow money from China to build our roads. Or, as Obama suggested, the wealthy should pay their fair share. Pay their fair share. Pay those taxes. Those corporate jet owners should pay. Those millionaires and billionaires, never mind that, that all sounds great. But what he means is those who make over $250,000 a year, a lot of them small business owners. So basically he is asking small business owners to pay to employ people temporarily. What will occur is that they'll pay more, they'll lay some folks off, and it'll probably end up a wash. There'll be some temporary hiring for jobs that are not shovel ready. We'll have more of those morons standing around. You've all seen them with those vests on, those fluorescent vests on, as we drive by our morning work rate. Or as we're going to the grocery store, we see the dude standing there with the sign that says slow. Do you ever wonder how much that guy's pulling down? Just to stand there with the sign that says slow? How much is he making? And those other guys, have you ever noticed? They're not usually doing anything. They're not doing anything at all. I challenge any of my listeners to drive down the road where there's a construction crew allegedly working and count how many of them are actually working. And frankly, the next time I go out and I see that dude, because it's almost always a guy, standing there holding the sign that says slow, I'm going to pull my vehicle over and I'm going to ask him how much he's getting paid to do that. We've heard it all before. These shovel-ready jobs. If you sink money into this, that, and the other thing, then we'll create jobs. Ask yourselves this question. Should the government be in the habit of creating jobs? And if the government believes that they can create jobs, then we're no longer a capitalist country. Not really. For the last few years, no, for the last 50 years, well, no, since FDR, I don't know how many years that's been, 50, 60 years, the government has been about the business of saying that it's their responsibility to create jobs for the American people. Well, doesn't that really make us a socialist country, a Marxist country, when the government takes it upon themselves to create jobs? Or should it be more about the government simply fostering an environment where entrepreneurs can ply their trades, get out of the way? It's a scary thing when the government says that we're in the business of job creation. Now, when it comes to the economy, presidents, like quarterbacks, often get more credit or blame than they deserve. They inherit problems and policies that affect the economy well into their presidencies and beyond. As we've seen with President Bush, Reagan inherited Carter's stagnation, or stagflation, if you will. George H.W. Bush, twin financial crisis, savings and loan, and the third world debt. And their fixes certainly benefited the Clinton economy. President Obama inherited a deep recession and financial crisis resulting from problems that had been building for years, which he is not shy about telling you about. Those responsible include borrowers and lenders on Wall Street and Main Street, including the Federal Reserve, regulatory agencies, ratings agencies, presidents, and Congress. Mr. Obama's successor, if there is one, will inherit his deficits and debt, i.e., perhaps pressure for higher taxes, inflation, and the dollar decline. But fairly or not, historians document what occurred on your watch how you dealt with your inbox. Nearly 3 years since his election, Obama, more than 2 years since the economic recovery began, Mr. Obama has enacted a myriad of policies at great expense to the American taxpayer and amid political rancor. We have plenty to evaluate, but not a lot of time to do it. Consider the direct results of Obama's programs. Few have performed better than expected. The auto bailouts, although a rapid private bankruptcy is preferable, and GM and Chrysler are not yet denationalized success. But the failed stimulus bill cost an astounding 280,000 per job, or five times the median pay. By the administration's inflated estimates of jobs created or saved, this is a disaster. Why not just give each individual worker $208,000? It's disastrous. And the the president simply wants to, at the time, on this day, double down and do exactly what he did when he first came into office. He knows fully well it won't work. But it's all theater from here on out. Because the president knows that his ideas will fail. And counting on the Republicans to balk at every single policy he seeks to enact as of tonight. So he can lay blame and say that he wanted to do all these great things for the American people, and the Republicans told him to go to hell. I do believe that Republicans, the House and Senate Republicans, are smarter than this. They're not going to fall for this trap. They're not going to do it. Tomorrow is going to be an interesting day, because tomorrow the American people will have their say regarding this farce that President Obama has laid on the American people, this theater. Now, Patriot Greg says that I'm breaking up. Must be a Skype issue. It almost always is. I hate it when that happens. We're going to take a short break. Try to figure out what's going on. Maybe it's me. I'll be right back. Yeah, it may be me.
The 9/11 Crusades.
The Crusades never ended for one religion.
One religion.
Islam has risen and fallen many times in its bloody history. The morning of Tuesday, September 11th, was a beautiful morning.
A beautiful morning.
And then, after the first plane struck the first tower, our lives were changed forever. As we watched in sheer horror, trying to wrap our minds around what had just happened, wondering how it could possibly be worse than this. All eyes in the world were watching as the second plane struck the second tower. That's when we knew how it could get worse. And then, reports of other planes that were unaccounted for. Where were they headed? The answers came as the events of the day unfolded. The 9/11 attacks were their attempt to rise to power after influencing and infiltrating for the past 90 years. WAAU Radio Network, in conjunction with several independent Blog Talk Radio hosts, presents a spectacular three-part series honoring the historic, heroic, and epic battle we face to rid our nation of the fanaticism that has plagued the entire world for centuries. This special will air on the 10th anniversary of 9/11, starting at 4 p.m. Eastern.
This 9/11 special will span 6 hours and 3 radio shows, all found on Blog Talk Radio. Look for Tesla's show named Socialism is Not an Option, the Hot Topic episode. Special co-host and contributor is Annie Abellis of the Blog Talk Radio show, Southern Sense. Next is Stay Mad Radio, hosted by me, David Graham. Joining me as my special co-host and contributor, host of his own show, still flying over the heartland, is Flyover Territory, a.k.a. Eric. And finishing up with Dr. C. Robert Jones, as he hosts his show called The Conservative Report. The three of us felt like doing something special to keep the memory alive and to rekindle the patriotism on display in the months and years that followed. This is sure to be a memorable occasion and a fitting memorial.
The 9/11 Crusades, Part 1, The Beginning.
Tesla's Hot Topic episode will bring us through the lead-up to the events of 9/11. He'll look at how Islamic atrocities provoked the original Crusades. And why did they hate us in 1783? And Thomas Jefferson read the Quran? Tesla will look at Bin Laden and Al-Qaeda and the history and origins of the Muslim Brotherhood. Part 1 airs September 11th, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern.
The 9/11 Crusades, Part 2, The Aftermath.
Tesla will pass the baton to me, David Graham, with Stay Mad Radio. We'll walk through what has happened since, with all the struggles of the family, the first responders. We'll talk about the controversy in the Ground Zero Mosque, and where we stand currently. There will also be an appearance of Haran Angel to give us thoughts and feelings from the day of the event from an Iranian point of view. Hour 2 will feature Charles Faddis, a recent guest on Stay Mad Radio, a retired CIA agent with his unique perspective. We'll talk about the wall of separation and the Clinton connection. Part 2 airs September 11th, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern.
The 9/11 Crusades, Part 3, The Reflection Forum.
Doc Jones' Conservative Report will continue the show to illustrate where all this is going. Doc will take you through his memory of the day, and then he will open his show reverently to any callers wishing to express their story, express their feelings on that day, and what their thoughts are. There will be historical facts laid out in the fashion that only Doc Jones can do. And of course, no shortage of opinions. And please make this your reverent forum to close out the 10th anniversary of 9/11. And Part 3 airs September 11th, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern.
We hope you'll join us for any or all of these special shows to learn and remember with us. These episodes will all be in our archives. You can't be live with us. And we want this to be our contribution to the memory and reverence of the event. We sincerely thank you for supporting our special and hope it means as much to you as it does to us.
Never forget.
All right, we're back. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. I hope that the sound... I sound like Barack Obama when I say I hope. My hope is that the sound is a little bit better than it was before, or at least, well, a lot better. So where were we? We were talking about Keynesian economics. The fallacy that government creates jobs, that the government can create jobs. And this all started in my mind with the or to my knowledge, with the Roosevelt University. Hoover dabbled just a bit. Roosevelt took it on home. Let's go with the debate. Let's have a debate about Keynesian economics, which is what Barack Obama espouses. Keynesian economics is the theory that the economy can be boosted if the government borrows money and then gives it to people so they'll spend it. Meaning that we're priming the pump. And we're going to take one more break here while I try to figure out why we're breaking up here. Just a short break. Figure out why we're breaking up here. Because I think it bears some investigation while we have a minute. Let's take a quick a humorous break from my man Howard Stern talking about Obama supporters being idiots. This is classic Howard Stern. Take a listen. We'll be right back.
And most people said Barack Obama. So what he said is, do you support Obama's views? But he attributed all of McCain's views to Obama.
Yeah. And it didn't sway anyone. But it didn't cause people to even flinch. They went right along.
This is crazy. So listen to this.
Some people speculate that blacks are voting for Obama strictly because he's black and not because of his policies. So we took McCain's policies and pretended they were Obama's. This is what they had to say. For the election, Obama or McCain? I like Obama. Now, what don't you like about McCain?
McCain seems to not really know what he's doing right now.
Are you more for Obama's policy because he's pro-life or because he thinks our troops should stay in Iraq and finish this war?
I think because our troops should stay in Iraq and finish this war. I'm really for him with that.
Definitely. Okay. Now, how about as far as him being pro-life? Do you support Obama in that case?
Yeah, I do. I do. I support him in that case.
And if he wins, would you have any problem with Sarah Palin being vice president?
No, I wouldn't. Not at all.
You think he made the right choice on that?
I definitely do. Thank you very much, sir.
Have a great day.
So the guy agreed with everything McCain is for, except he said it was for Obama. Here's another example.
Are you for Obama or McCain?
Obama.
Okay, and why not McCain?
Well, I just don't agree with some of his, policies. No.
Now, Obama says that he's anti-stem cell research. How do you feel about that?
I believe that's... I wouldn't do that either. I'm anti-stem cell, yeah.
You are anti-stem cell research. Now, if Obama wins, do you mind Sarah Palin being vice president?
No, I don't.
All right, there you go. And then our third example, which we found this woman.
In this election, Obama or McCain?
Obama.
Now, why not McCain? What don't you like about him?
He sort of doesn't sound like he has enough... Like, he's uneducated, because when he had the, they had the vote for the president speaking, he didn't sound like he knew what he was talking about too much, whereas Obama had facts and information when he was speaking.
Good point. Let me ask you this. Do you support Obama more because he's pro-life or because he says our troops should stay in Iraq and finish the war?
I guess both.
Now, if Obama wins, do you have any problem with Sarah Palin being his vice president?
No.
No,
not
you think
at all.
She'll do a good job?
I think she'll do a good job.
Are you glad he elected her to be the VP if he wins?
Yep.
Thank you very much.
All right, there it is, Sal in Harlem. And
okay, now that was hilarious. It just goes to prove that so many of these people who have voted for Barack Obama and who stand by him almost religiously have no idea what the guy's really all about. They simply stand by him because he's black. He's a black man. And that's it. That's it. He's black. And I am really sorry that I'm having difficulty with my oratory here, with my audible, my sound. I think it might be Skype. I don't know. We're always having trouble with that, with the Skype thing here. But we're going to wrap this show up. We're going to just go ahead and give a brief lesson in Keynesian economics. And then we're going to get out of here. We're going to go watch the game. And maybe listen to a couple of other blog talk shows along the way. Now, Keynesian economics is the theory that the economy can be boosted if the government borrows money and then gives it to people so they'll spend it. It's just that simple. This supposedly primes the pump as the money circulates through the economy. A Keynesian theory sounds really good, and it would be nice if it made sense. But it doesn't work. It overlooks the fact that in the real world, government can't inject money into the economy without first taking money out of the economy. More specifically, the theory only looked at one half of the equation. The part where government puts money, in the economy's right pocket. But where does the government get that money? It borrows it, which means it comes out of the economy's left pocket. One hand washes the other. It's kind of like this. I have two credit cards. I have a Visa and I have a MasterCard. The Visa card, well, that bill is coming due. But the MasterCard doesn't have to be paid until halfway into the month. You following me here? I hope you are. So what I do is I go to the ATM and I borrow the $75 that it's going to take to pay the Visa bill from the MasterCard. I take the $75 that I borrowed from the MasterCard to pay the Visa bill. And then, 15 days later, when the MasterCard bill is due, I take the same $75 from the Visa to pay the MasterCard bill. I have actually done that once or twice when I was very young and very broke. I have often, as a younger man, used one credit card to pay another credit card's monthly billing. That is what I just laid out for you. What I did as a 22, 23-year-old is a prime example of Keynesian economics. The money is coming from somewhere, but it's coming from my right pocket to pay my left. And this is all what Barack Obama wants to do tonight. He wants to take money from one pocket and put it in the next. But the money has to come from somewhere. Somebody has to pay it. It's all theater, folks. This guy has no idea what he's doing. And if the Republicans are not careful, they're going to be blamed for standing in the way of Americans being employed. Can you imagine 99 weeks more of unemployment funds coming in for a lot of folks? How does that help bring down the jobless number? No, what Barack Obama wants to do in that case is basically pay off potential voters. Another 99 weeks? Well, how many weeks are in a year? 52, 53 with leap year, I think. That'll get him right up until election time and further. He's paying off voters with government money that he's borrowing from someplace else, robbing Peter to pay Paul. Is this the way government should be doing business? Or should we not be getting this guy out of here in November of next year? He has been a disaster. Unmitigated, complete disaster. And quite frankly, the speech was pretty damn good. he seemed more impassioned than at any other time. And damn it, Tesla, Green Bay versus New Orleans, Green Bay 7, New Orleans nothing. Really? Is that a hint? Oh, my goodness. I have it on right here. All right. That seems like my cue for us to go ahead and get on out of here. I want to thank everybody for listening tonight and thank Tesla for that not-so-subtle hint. You guys are great. Thank you for taking the time to listen, to spend some time with me here tonight, even though the game is on. And damn it, I want to get to it, too. So we're going to go ahead and get out of here. Thank you for listening, everybody. I appreciate your patience with the sound issues and taking the time to listen, even though the game is on and Green Bay has just recently scored. Have a great night, folks. Come back tomorrow when there's no football game on, and we'll talk more about Obama's speech and all the fallout from it. You guys are great. Have a great night. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.
Today is just like the fictional future that Rand foresaw in Atlas Shrugged. It's a time of crisis and decay, but it's also a world of innovation and achievement. It's a world of heroes and villains, driven by very different philosophies. We wrote I Am John Galt to tell their stories. We look at the heroic innovators who are building our world and show that they're doing it just like the heroes of Ayn Rand's novels. They're using her philosophy of capitalism, reason, objective reality, and self-interest. Who is John Galt? Meet John Allison, the mild-mannered Southerner who created one of America's greatest banking empires. He did it with Ayn Rand's philosophy, letting every one of his tens of thousands of employees to read Atlas Shrugged, live by its code. In the financial crisis of 2008, his bank was about the only one that didn't need government bailout. The government forced Allison to take TARP money anyway. After that, Allison walked away, just John Galt did. There are so many other Rand heroes in our midst. There's Bill Gates, genius who built the world's greatest company and the world's greatest personal fortune, only to have his own government call him a criminal for succeeding too much. Isn't he just like Hank Reardon from Atlas Shrugged? And how about